one game. An NBA Finals seventh game. One game, the difference between basketball immortality and crushing disappointment. One game, a chance to become a legend, a hero, a champion.
What motivates me now more than ever is winning another championship.
It's going to take heart. It's going to take an uncanny amount of energy and strength.
To win a championship, it was one of the most emotional times of my life because that's what I play for.
One game, a chance for a legacy to grow. One final game. A season-long journey draws to a close.
Top of the world! Top of the world!
All right, and we are continuing talking about the best Game 7s in NBA Finals history. We are down to our number four choice of the Miami Heat taking on the San Antonio Spurs in the 2013 NBA Finals. The Heat winning 95-88, and you know this series is definitely best remembered for the remarkable Game 6, really one of the greatest NBA games in history. But you know, Game 7 was pretty close.
Yeah, it got overshadowed a little bit by the Game 6, and rightfully so. I mean, like you mentioned, and that's not what this podcast is about. Is it, you know, talking Game 6? We should do that—the best Game 6s of all time. Well, that'll be our series next. But I mean, that's an incredible game. And then when it was over, like everybody was just sort of like worn out in a lot of ways. And I remember this Game 7 got really lost, and I remember watching it and really enjoying it. But it was like, it's not the same. Like, you know, you were almost disappointed because it wasn't as incredible as that Game 6 was. Because as you said, like in my years of watching basketball, that might have been the most excited and most like I don't even know how to describe. There's so many emotions in that. And I didn't really have a vested interest in either of those teams. But this Game 7 definitely deserves a little bit of credit as well. I mean, it was an absolutely spectacular one. And though, you know, 95-88 doesn't sound very close, it felt a lot closer. And people that remember watching it remember that it was much closer than maybe that score indicates. And that's why it's, you know, our fourth, you know, Game 7 of all time. Because it's a spectacular game. It's a really, really great game.
Yeah, and neither team had a bigger lead than 7 points throughout. I mean, the Spurs were up seven, you know, pretty early on in the first quarter, I think midway through the first. And then the Heat were only up by seven at the very end. So, I mean, it really was a two-point game going into the with 24 seconds left. And then LeBron, after Duncan, he misses a pretty easy layup, and then misses the follow-up tip-in, like a two-footer in the lane, and then the Heat get the ball. I think Bosch got the rebound, and then they end up calling a timeout, and LeBron just hits a deadly jumper right on Kawhi Leonard to put the Heat up by four. And then after that, on the Spurs' next chance, Manu Ginobili sort of drives into the drives near the basket, gets under the basket, sort of throws a wild pass, and LeBron catches it and then hits free throws to basically seal the game from there. But I agree with what you're talking about, how it did seem like these teams were emotionally spent, it did still, like, it really felt like a hard-fought, intense, like, well-played game, despite that feeling of, like, you know, not quite, even though there's a sense of not quite adding up to Game 6, it's still, like, it was a stronger, more intense game than I kind of recall it being, even though I did recall it being very good. And obviously it ranks highly in our list of games.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember that series for a few different things. And you mentioned, and specifically this game as well, you mentioned the Manu Ginobili and his, you know, he had a lot of kind of issues in big stretches throughout that series. There was one time, I forgot, he like dribbled off his foot or something like that, if I remember correctly. I don't recall what game that was, maybe Game 6. And then this one, as you mentioned as well, that was like patently, you know, he gets down there, he's down below the basket, and then he just tosses it away, and it's like, oh damn, like and that you know, it seals it for, you know, Miami, and just seals it for LeBron. But man, the one thing I also remember is just how good LeBron James was during this entire series and during this entire year. I really think, you know, looking at his career, and we're starting to, you know, we're getting to a point, you know, obviously these finals, the ones that are, you know, going on right now, or, you know, by the time you listen to this, could possibly be over. You know, we're seeing, you know, monumentally great performances from him in that too. But I just remember this year as being just, I don't know if we're going to see a better year from LeBron James, or a better, you know, series, or just a better playoffs, or just anything from LeBron. I mean, this was the peak efficiency years of LeBron, where it was just like unbelievable the stuff he was able to do and how efficient he was able to be that year. So,
yeah. And he 25 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists, 2.3 steals for the playoffs on 45% shooting, 35% from 3-point line. I mean, he really delivered some, you know, and yeah, I mean, and this was like early on in the series, the Spurs had the strategy of sort of letting him take the jumpers, and his jumpers were a little bit off kind of early on in the series. You know, there were a couple of, there's one just huge blowout Spurs win. The Spurs won by almost 40 in the series. But then, you know, eventually LeBron just trusted his jumper, Wade to a certain extent as well, and they made him pay, and they, you know, won two very close games. They were down 3-2 in the series. Were able to rally at, you know, get the final two games at home in very close fashion and win the series.
Absolutely. And the Heat, a little nugget here, the Heat were the fourth team to win the NBA title by coming back from 3-2. So and win the final two games at home as well, which is another little caveat. The only people to do that were the LA Lakers in 88 and 2010, and then the Houston Rockets in 1994, a series we talked about not that long ago. So definitely interesting. And then, you know, James, you know, he secures the finals MVP. He has 37 points, 12 rebounds. The other remarkable thing, though, too, is if you watch the highlights and if you guys remember the games as well, is that he's guarding Tony Parker during a lot of it and shutting Tony Parker down in a lot of ways, which is, you know, we talk about LeBron and just what a rare talent he is and how fun it is. I mean, this is a guy who at any given time can guard a center or stick with, you know, one of the fastest, you know, cagiest point guards in the league, too. It's just incredible what he can do and just appreciate, you know, the amount of skills he has, not only offensively, but defensively as well. That's where I've always really enjoyed watching LeBron is what he can do defensively.
Yeah. You know, he's just fantastic on both ends. And I think you're right. You know, just kind of at the peak of his powers here. You know, he tied Tommy Heinsohn's record for most points in an NBA Finals Game 7 win with 37 points, 12 rebounds. Parker was 3-for-12 from the field, only 10 points, minus 8 for the game, I believe. And, Spurs were, you know, pretty much powered by Duncan, who had 24-12. Kawhi Leonard, who had 19 points and 16 rebounds. Of course, Leonard would be the MVP of the finals of the next season, which would be the rematch between the Spurs and the Heat, which the Spurs would win fairly easily.
And this was kind of his coming out party as well, this series, if people remember correctly. I mean, in this game, he played 45 minutes, and Pop really started to be trusting him at a different level that would lead to, you know, the Kawhi Leonard we know today, because we sort of take it for granted that he came in with, you know, he was still very raw at this point. And then that, and this was, I think, this playoff series in general. And then, was really the time when you started seeing that, hey, this guy's pretty good. This guy's got some talent. And, you know, as you said, it would lead, you know, next year to him becoming the finals MVP. So.
Yeah, and Wade also, you know, had 23-10, and he had kind of was up and down throughout the series. Bosch actually famously didn't score a point, but was just so good defensively that, you know, he was able to kind of contribute without, without scoring, you know, even though he struggled from that, and he was still a net positive because of just the, you know, his ability to, play both interior and go out on shooters and defend real well. And I guess the surprise star of the game was Shane Battier, who was 6-from-8 from three. If I recall correctly, he had really struggled with his outside shot for a lot of the playoffs.
Yes.
So this was kind of like Mike Miller did a similar thing the year before where he had kind of struggled for most of the playoffs. And then he had just a breakout game five against the Thunder and for the Heat to win their first championship. And then Battier kind of did a similar thing on this season.
Yeah, I'm firing up the Battier game logs here because I remember it just being really bad for him, if I remember correctly. I guess it wasn't as bad. Oh, no, it was bad in the earlier seasons, or the earlier series, rather. And then in the finals, okay. he got it together. Yeah, there's a bunch of clunkers here against Milwaukee. 1-7, 2-7, 1-6, 2-7, 0-4, 0-2. So, yeah, but the finals, though, the first game, 0-3. This is all from 3. Second game, 1-3. Third game, 0-2, 0-1. And then something got clicked or someone figured it out in the last three games because 2-6 in game 5. 3-4 in game 6, and then of course the 6-8 from game 7, and then of course a celebratory Denny's dinner as he always did.
Yeah,
which I don't know if you remember that, his tweeting out of his him and his like family at Denny's, which is the greatest way to celebrate an NBA championship. Everybody else is going to clubs, and he's deciding what to get on his make your own breakfast. But that's I don't know if he got I can't confirm or deny that if he got breakfast or the dinner. I would hope he got the breakfast at Denny's. But
you would want to have a Grand Slam breakfast after winning an NBA championship. That would just make sense.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever? Because I've never personally ate. Have you ever ate the non breakfast food at Denny's?
Because
I always just get the breakfast, regardless of what hour.
I probably have, but I don't specifically remember. Like, I've been to Denny's, like, maybe three times in my life, so...
Yeah, I'm not a fan either. There's so many, like, little breakfast places I would rather go to, or, like, things owned by Greek people that... I don't know if you guys have those. We have tons of Greek-run breakfast restaurants that are open, like, till ungodly hours of the day, and those are always superior to, obviously Denny's, so...
Yeah, we have some Greek restaurants, but none that I recall that specialize in breakfast, although that's something off to...
Oh, it must be a Chicago thing, then. We have, like, everywhere. Every town has, like, six of them, and they're like, everywhere, and they're all, like... Huh. They're all the same, and they're all owned by, like, the guys that look the same, even though, like, you assume they're all brothers or whatever. They're all fantastic, and this has nothing to do with Game 7, so I guess we should move on, but...
Well, it's...
I enjoy breakfast food, all right?
We're learning about things. I like breakfast food as well. It's a delight. It's my favorite meal of the day. So.
Absolutely.
All right. I guess
I just don't eat it all the time. But who's got time? Who's got time to make eggs in the morning? Come on.
No, I just have a good bowl of oatmeal. It makes me happy. Yeah. So, cup of coffee. Absolutely. I'm a simple man. Right. Simple pleasures. Yeah. So game three, our selection for the third choice for our game 7 series, Boston Celtics against Los Angeles Lakers. This is the last time.
Who would have thought?
Yeah.
Who would have thought? So how many times did we say them officially then? This is our final time. What was it? 7?
I don't think it was quite that many, but it was a lot. Yeah, it was what would have been 4 of them in the 60s, I believe. Or maybe just 3 of them in the 60s. The 2010, 84. So I don't know, 6 or 7, a high amount, that's for sure.
I'm sick of them.
Yeah, well, we're done after this. Yeah. So
thank God.
This is the, although we do actually get the Celtics and the Lakers again. Afterwards.
I was going to say, we're not really going with it.
It's not against each other. No. This is the second of 7 finals victories by the Celtics over the Lakers during the, Bill Russell era. That's right. Yeah. And the first, finals for the Lakers in the city of Los Angeles, they'd of course had moved from Minneapolis a couple years before. This was the 5th title in a row for the Celtics and the 6th out of 7. They won this game in overtime 110-107. Elgin Baylor having 41-22 in this game. And he had a finals record 61 points in game 5 of the series, which the Lakers had won in Boston. It actually went back to LA in game 6. And the Lakers laid an egg and then went back to Boston, and Boston won game 7 as well. So, yeah, they were up 3-2 in this series. They definitely had a chance to make it happen, but it did not for them. But Baylor was only 41-18 in the series with 3.7 assists and 43% shooting, which was pretty good in this era.
He just doesn't know how to win, though. That's the problem.
He did not know how to win. Yeah.
It's very much a Baylor and West team. When you look at, especially at the box score of this game 7, it's like, 41 for Baylor, 35 for West, and then a whole pile of nothing. I mean, Selvey gets 10, Krebs gets 8, but it's the rest of it is nothing. It's those two guys just leading the charge. And those two are the all-time greats or whatever, but it's just not enough compared with that Boston team. I mean, there's just too much firepower on that Boston team.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Lakers did have good, like, role players. Like, you know, LaRusso was kind of like, a good defensive player. I think he actually may have made some all-star teams. Like, he was, you know, maybe a little better than that, but he wasn't a scorer. You know, that wasn't his role, which is fine. I mean, the Lakers obviously had, you know, some incredible teams. Jerry West made, you know, 8 finals in his career, only won one. But, you know, they just ran into, you know, they ran into the Celtics a whole bunch of times, and no one was beating the Celtics because, you know, they were awesome. So, but yeah, and Baylor, you know, during this year, he was in the Army Reserve. So he was only like a part-time right. player. He wasn't able to, you know, train like usually was. He even said, there's a really cool, a PBS Kurt Gowdy hosted show in the middle of the 1970s talking to, Baylor and Frank Selvey and, Hot Rod Huntley and Red Auerbach and Cousy and Heinsohn about, you know, going back to this game and showing highlights from the series and just, you know, kind of going back through. And it was just kind of interesting to see, you know, what everyone said. And it was kind of neat to, you know, see them in the middle of the 70s talking about something that happened, you know, 15 years or so before that. You know, not to be outdone, Bill Russell only had 30 points and 40 rebounds in this game. Sam Jones with 27 and 8, Frank Ramsey with 23 and 5. So, you know, they weren't bad either. They had some pretty, strong moments there, but I guess the guy who this game is most famous for is Frank Selvey.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the Frank Selvey game.
One of many Frank Selvey games.
Yeah.
In the future that I'm sure we'll talk about, but no.
Sure. Probably. Sure. The Celtics are up by 4. There's a minute to go. It looks like they're going to win. But then Selvey hit a layup around Russell to put them down by 2. And then Jerry West gets a steal. He grabs and then he misses the shot. But then Selvey grabs the offensive rebound and hits another close shot to tie it. And then the Celtics miss again. Selvey has a chance to... Selvey has a chance to win it. He takes a pass from a Hot Rod Huntley, but then misses like a 15-foot baseline shot, which apparently was his shot that rimmed out right as the buzzer sounded. And it's funny because Chick Hearn actually makes a mistake in the commentary, thinking that the game is over, but then realizing, oh, yeah, we're going to overtime. But unfortunately for the Lakers, it was basically over at that point.
Yeah, it's a good look, too. And if you watch, there's some videos on YouTube as well of kind of breaking down this final shot and breaking down everything about it. And, you know, you get to a point where, you know, Selvey gets a great shot. It's a great look. He's pretty open. He takes it. There's sort of rumors or whatever that Cousy, you know, and Cousy does kind of get him on the elbow a little bit. That sort of affects it. And then I know Elgin Baylor has a quote as well that he was shoved from behind. I've watched the video like 7 times, like this Zapruder film, and I think Elgin's lying about that he was in perfect position for a rebound and he got shoved into the referee or whatever. And if you watch, like, he really wasn't anywhere near there, but that's okay, Elgin. That's fine. You did an okay job. But Selzy had a good look. Selzy had a great look.
Yeah, I didn't want to see that either. But yeah, I mean, you know, Elgin did enough in this game for, you know, for him to exactly, not to right. certainly you know, hang his head high, but at the
and yeah, there's a good you know a good fourth quarter as well. I mean, that's a guy too who's going to be remembered, you know, or is remembered rather, you know, for kind of missing that shot. But there was a lot of stuff he did to get them in there and get them to that point where they were tied to go in overtime. So that's absolutely worthwhile to kind of mention as well. So and it's a good look too. I mean, it's a look that, you know, probably 9 times out of 10, and that's what everybody said is that, yeah, that's his shot, that's his look, and it's point blank, it's right on target, and it just, you know, it just doesn't go in sometimes. Life sucks, especially when you're playing with Jerry West in the finals. But
yeah, there you go. What can you do? Heinsohn and Ramsey end up fouling out, and so Russell is there to kind of pick up the scoring slack. There's highlights of him getting a give and go with Cousy, I believe, or maybe it might have been another Celtic guard. I think it was Cousy, yeah. And then the Celtics are also able to pull ahead after Sam Jones hits a couple of jumpers, including one that put them up 109-103 and basically, you know, ended the Lakers' chances. And then there's the famous image of Bob Cousy sort of burning time off the clock at the, you know, at the end of the overtime by dribbling around the backcourt and then the crowd, as they were wont to do during this era, you know, up until the 80s, would then rush the court as, you know, the play is ending. So.
And sometimes ruin the final possession of the game.
Yeah,
we've seen multiple times. That's one of the themes of watching these, like, because we have a playlist together, you know, you created of all these game sevens or whatever, and you see, like, the final, like, 10 seconds is just always a mess. Like, there's you know, a famous one where you know, Magic Johnson and the crew has to be like, guys, get off the court so we can, like, finish this game. And then, you know, there's one we're going to talk about in our final episode, too, where... Like there's still time on the clock, and the crowd's just decided, no, we're going to take over the court now, and then the game's just kind of over. And it's just like, well, okay, like that's fine, I guess. But this one, I mean, it was over, but yeah, it's a very funny. And it's an image you've seen 10,000 times, as Cousy, you know, very close to the ground, dribbling, you know, in circles to you know, put a finale on the, or put a final touch on the game. But definitely a great game, and definitely one well worth, you know, our ranking as we have it. You know, not in the top two, but certainly well worth being top five.
Absolutely. I believe this was the first overtime NBA Finals game seven, if I'm not mistaken. Frank Selvey had a interesting little career. It just kind of, like, shows you, like, the just, you know, the way the league was during this time. But he began his career in for the old Baltimore Bullets in 1955, but that was the year that the Baltimore Bullets disbanded after, like, after 14 games. So he ended up after that on the Milwaukee Hawks, who moved to St. Louis the next year, and then he misses a year because of military service. And then the following year he splits between St. Louis and Minneapolis, and then he goes to the Knicks for a season, and then he splits the next season to between Syracuse and then another year in Minneapolis, and then he ends up moving to with the Lakers to Los Angeles and spends 4 years there. He's actually a two-time All-Star, including this season with the Lakers. He was 29 years old. So, you know, it's one of those kind of, like, you know, like, just You're part of the league, and you're just, you know, I mean, not that guys don't bounce around today, but, you know, there haven't been any teams that have disbanded, you know, 14 games in the
14
season
games.
Since then. So, you know, and having to, you know, just, you know, go from,
I mean, hypothetically, so the Sixers, hypothetically the Sixers do that, but not, you know,
that's right. Funny. Right. Yeah. Not an actual.
They still play the games, though. Yes.
They do play the games. And, yes.
Yeah. You don't get pulled out of military service either. I don't believe, although Andrew That's Bogut, wrong. Any minute now, when next time Australia invades somebody, I'm sure Bogut will be front of the line to
he'll be
invade.
He'll be anxious to go. Yeah, he's not being much. Say. Not much use in the series at this point. So
exactly right. So he will be more than happy to serve his native land. But yeah, no, that's just the interesting path again. Disbanding, and then, you know. It's just interesting because, yeah, we always hear, you know, that comment, oh, back in my day, you know, players stayed with their teams or whatever. But, yeah, your teams kind of went away sometimes, too, and, like, couldn't pay the bills. So our teams can pay the bills, old man.
That's true, yeah.
Hypothetical grandpa I'm arguing with. So
right. I'm sure hypothetical grandpa is listening to this right now. And
absolutely.
Very
he loves podcasts.
Yeah, he does. He loves podcasts. We're recording this right before game six of the final. So he, of course, like, Bogut's probably gonna, like, score, like, you know, gonna, like,
yeah,
score
gonna, like, 30
15 and have like 30 dunk, rebounds or something. Yeah. Right. And so we'll look silly, but you know, what happens?
That's fine. Hey, we're out there with bold predictions. What's your bold prediction for this game that everybody will, that by the time everybody listens to, it will have already happened?
I feel like it's going to be close, but that the Warriors will pull it out in game six to win the series.
I believe they will as well. So
right.
We will see.
All right,
I hope we're wrong, just so everybody can laugh.
I would love a game seven.
I really want the Warriors to win. Like, I really do, because I actually generally like the Warriors. And would love to see, you know, it's symbolic for us, because, you know, our first podcast ever was about Rick Barry, and that was the last time the Warriors or whatever.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
the fact that
we're doing a series right now of an NBA Finals Game 7, it would be kind of cool if it went to Game 7, you know? It'd be like, it would really help our, like, advertising to be like, hey, here's an NBA Finals Game 7. Oh, wait a minute. Like, what is this? Seven, like, eight podcasts seven. About NBA Finals Game 7? That's weird. So that'll be fun. But
it would be nice,
I don't know. I'm torn.
Yeah,
exactly right. So I'm a little torn, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think honestly, if the Warriors win the series, you could basically give us credit for that by our Rick Barry podcast, I think.
Right. They haven't won any other year, and every other year we haven't done a podcast about Rick Barry. So,
yeah,
I mean,
that makes sense.
It's you know, put two and two together, people. It's right there in front of you. So yes, I am personally taking credit for it. So it's
all right. I think either way, either team winning is a good story and great for their fan bases who have suffered through a lot. So
Right. And then that's the other thing too. A part of me is also like, yeah, it wouldn't be the worst if Cleveland won, you know, as well. It would fit the story, it'd fit the narrative. But I really want the. I don't know. I'm very jaded. I'm just happy. Everybody have a good time and nobody get hurt. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, it would be cool for the. It would be a fun story if the Warriors won this year and then, you know, Cleveland gets Irving and Love back and sort of figures out, okay, we have this interesting identity we forged during the finals, but now we have like a great talent back. Let's, you know, we kind of figured out a template here and let's go and make a run and be really motivated all season. And then, you know, and try to get a rematch if possible, you know, not that both teams wouldn't have to go through a lot to do that, but you know, you could see that being something to look forward to next season. So
certainly like sort of the Miami Big Three model where it's like, okay, we were kind of weird at first. We got it now. We're good. Let's go. And then, you know,
Right. So. When Bosch's injury kind of forced them to have like figure out their identity, you could see that kind of being a similar thing here. You know, whether Love would fit that or is, you know, a question for other people. But, you know, that's something I can think of. Of course, as a Hawks fan, I would be disappointed because, you know, I'm perpetually disappointed because our teams tend to suck. But I think we should close this one out, Rich, and I think we should get to our final show on the game.
Yes.
You know, before we do something.
The big countdown. I wonder if people are guessing right now and plotting and scheming and wondering what are those last two games? What are those final two? You could probably guess pretty easily.
I mean, you know, we did all of them, so I would think.
I would hope that. But that's a lot of effort. That's a lot of effort to, you know, look up a Wikipedia or whatever. I mean, who wants to do that? Who's got time for that?
Who's got time for that? Indeed. So, all right, everyone. Well, we'll be back in your earballs soon.